This podcast contains descriptions of violence against children and adult language and is not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi guys, and welcome to Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane, and this is episode 38, Zara Baker, Part 1. By the time she was 8 years old, Zara Baker beat cancer not once, but twice, losing a leg and most of her hearing in the process. Because her father had been single for most of Zara's life, she was thrilled when he finally married. But her excitement was short-lived. Almost immediately after Zara and her dad moved from their native Australia to her stepmother's home state of North Carolina, neighbors and school officials began seeing signs that Zara was being abused by her stepmother, Elisa Baker. When Zara was reported missing on October 9, 2010, it didn't take long for Elisa's story of a kidnapping to unravel and her sordid, stranger-than-fiction past to surface. Still, all of us watching breathlessly from around the world held on to the hope that Zara might be found alive. That was, until law enforcement started finding body parts scattered around western North Carolina. This is part one of the unbelievable story of Zara Baker. My sources for today's episode were The Charlotte Observer, The Hickory Record, WSOC-TV, WRAL, Wikipedia, AOL News Archive, The Daily Mail, Connie Moments Blog, Drum Funeral Home, The Observer News Enterprise, The Daily Telegraph, ABC News, The Associated Press, The Advertiser, Mock Forums, Live 5 News, The Sydney Morning Herald, The North Carolina General Assembly website, and court documents. Before I get into today's episode, take a listen to this promo from another excellent true crime podcast, Reverie True Crime.
My name is Paige, and I'm the host of Reverie True Crime. Reverie means to daydream, but even daydreams can turn into nightmares. Join me as I tell you haunting and horrific reveries about missing people and senseless murders. I also interview survivors and people seeking justice for themselves or a loved one. New episodes come out every Monday morning, and sometimes you'll get bonus episodes on Thursdays. Wherever you're listening to this current podcast right now, you can find Reverie True Crime.
If you get a chance, check out Reverie True Crime. Paige is doing great work over there. This was a high-profile story when it happened in 2010. But I think enough time has passed that some people may not know about what happened to Zara. I followed her story from the time she first went missing, and this little fighter definitely has a piece of my heart. I always knew I'd cover her story someday. A full decade has passed since her beautiful light was snuffed out by the embodiment of the wicked stepmother stereotype. November 12th was the 10-year anniversary of the day police confirmed Zara was dead. More importantly, on Monday, November 16th, 2020, yesterday, if you're listening to this the day it comes out, Zara would have celebrated her 21st birthday, so I thought now was a fitting time to cover her story and to help keep Zara's memory alive. Zara Claire Baker, whose name means white flower, was born on November 16, 1999, in Wagga Wagga, Australia. Wagga Wagga is a major regional city in New South Wales with a population of about 56,000 as of 2018. Zara's parents, Adam Baker and Emily Dietrich, were both Wagga Wagga natives as well. They met when Emily was a teenager and Adam in his early 20s, and they were engaged but never married. Emily was just 19 when Zara, her first child, was born, and she immediately found herself in the grip of severe postpartum depression, although she didn't know it at the time. When Zara was 8 months old, Emily made the difficult decision to relinquish custody of her little girl to Adam. Emily later told a reporter,
"I didn't have the strength to keep doing it. I didn't want to hate my child. I didn't want to be that news story people hear about, the mother who drowns her child or couldn't stop them crying and smothered them. I didn't want to be that mother. I didn't do it because I didn't love her. I did it because I did love her."
Adam, however, quickly shut Emily out of Zara's life. Years later, Emily's friend, Lisa Ridgway, told a reporter,
"She told us that she felt good about giving Zara to Adam because she trusted that his mother would be good to Zara."
Lisa said that trust faded as Emily spent years searching for and trying to reunite with her daughter. Emily told Lisa,
"I did not have the financial means to find my child."
Lisa added,
"It broke her heart that she was not able to find Zara."
Emily's aunt, Diane Ross, told a reporter,
"We weren't allowed to ring the Bakers, and every time we tried, they'd moved, changed phone numbers, the whole works."
Emily and her family discovered Zara's whereabouts in September of 2008, when her picture was published in the Townsville Bulletin newspaper, depicting Zara on top of an army vehicle during a day out for child cancer survivors at Townsville's Laverick Army Barracks. By then, however, it was too late to get in touch with Zara, who, shortly after that photo was published, left Australia with her father and his new wife, headed for America. Now let's talk about Zara's early life with her dad. In 2004, Adam and Zara, along with Adam's parents and at least one of his brothers, moved to the extremely small town of Giru, Queensland, when Adam and several family members secured jobs at the Invicta sugar mill. At the time, Giru had a population of just 375 people. In 2005, at the age of 5, Zara was diagnosed with bone cancer. Adam took time off from the sugar mill to care for Zara while she went through chemotherapy. Her cancer necessitated the amputation of her left leg above the knee while Zara was still only 5. Jane Fenton, an employee at a daycare center in Giru, later said,
"Zara seemed very happy. She always came in with a smile on her face, and she was clean and everything. She was at preschool then and had just been diagnosed with the cancer. Then she went away for treatment. Afterwards, she came back for a visit with her grandmother. I gathered that her father really did care for her. He brought her through the chemo and everything. She was a very happy, determined little girl. She was willing to give anything a go."
Zara's cancer seemed to be under control for a time, but in 2007, she was diagnosed with secondary lung cancer and had to undergo surgery to have part of one lung removed. During treatment for this bout of cancer, Zara lost some of her hearing and would eventually wear hearing aids on both ears. Zara was a beautiful child with brown hair often cut about chin length, lively blue eyes that look green in some photos, and a spray of freckles across her nose, cheeks, and chin. She was tall and thin, and one of her most distinctive features was her radiant smile, which not even two bouts of cancer could dull. Elisa Annette Fairchild was born on June 6, 1968, in Burke County, North Carolina, to Marshall Thomas Fairchild and Sylvia Jean Barnes Fairchild. Elisa was the middle child of three girls whose parents worked in the Western North Carolina textile mills and furniture factories in the late 1960s. Elisa's father reportedly doted on her, while her mom was the family disciplinarian. As a child, Elisa was a pretty girl with chubby cheeks and raven black hair. As she matured, she was an attractive teenage girl who grew to become manipulative, cunning, deceptive, and insecure as she struggled with obesity. Even as she aged and gained more weight, however, men continued to find themselves drawn to her. In her teen years, Elisa, formerly well-behaved, started talking back to and swearing at her mother, who, according to Elisa's Aunt Bonzetta, would retaliate by slapping Elisa.
"That was just the way people around here disciplined their children."
While still in her teens, Elisa found herself pregnant with her first child, Amber. Elisa and Amber's father, Christopher Frank Hicks, were never married. Early on, it seems Elisa committed herself to living a life of deception, as described by friends, family members, and her multiple ex-husbands. Prior to marrying Zara's father, Elisa was married 6 times, and she often didn't bother divorcing her previous husband before marrying the next. In fact, during 1 3-year period, she was married to 3 different men at the same time. Elisa's MO was to lure in vulnerable men, win them over, marry them, and squeeze them dry of everything she could get from them, whether it be money, though never much, attention, or anything else. She was constantly moving around, and although her family and friends didn't know it at the time, she was exceedingly skilled at evading bill collectors, police, and social workers who were investigating her for child abuse. In 1 7-year period, Elisa had no fewer than 42 addresses. When she abandoned a relationship, she tended to sever all ties, so not many people noticed her pattern. Court documents would later show multiple aliases for Elisa. Not including her various married names, she also used the alias Dawn Michelle Church at some point. Elisa's first marriage was to a young man named Jerry Allen Winkler in Caldwell County, North Carolina. Elisa and Jerry dated off and on in high school. Jerry told the Associated Press of Elisa,
"We went to football games, school dances. She was a good dancer."
The two both dropped out of high school and lost touch for about a year before he ran into her at a local gas station with her newborn, Amber. She told Jerry the baby's father had left her. Jerry asked her out, and a week later, he asked her to marry him. They were both still under 18, so they needed their parents' permission. They lied to Jerry's parents, even forging a copy of a blood test, telling them he was Amber's father. Within days of their marriage, though, Jerry was overwhelmed.
"I was 17 and married with a kid. It just hit me all at once, and I wanted out."
Jerry's father was also upset about being tricked into giving permission, so he asked a judge to annul the marriage, which was granted less than 4 months after the wedding. About a year later, Elisa met Joseph Proctor, who walked with a limp from a car accident that nearly killed him. They dated for several months. When she became pregnant with their son, Joseph proposed. They married on September 5th, 1987, when Elisa was 19 and Joseph was 28. A few months later, baby Douglas was born, and about a year after that, Elisa gave birth to her third and last biological child, Brittany. Elisa's marriage to Joseph was rocky. In April of 1989, Joseph and Elisa broke up temporarily, but Elisa refused to leave the house owned by Joseph's mother, Livertus White. Livertus asked a judge for a restraining order, accusing Elisa of stealing and destroying property in the home. She said Elisa told her,
"If I have to get out of here, I'll burn the house down. I'm going to kill this baby. I'm going to wreck this car. I'll kill those kids."
When the couple reconciled 2 months later, Joseph's mother dropped the complaint. Elisa and Joseph broke up for good when Elisa walked out on Christmas Day of 1990. She got custody of Amber and Brittany, and Joseph took custody of Douglas. The divorce was finalized in 1992. Around that time, Elisa met Andrew Harris Jr. at Tri-County Bar, a little honky-tonk in Lincolnton. Andrew walked in after working a long day at the J.P. Stevens textile plant and saw Elisa sipping Jack Daniels at the bar. She waved at him.
"We just hit it off. She was easy to talk to."
Elisa and Andrew married on April 17th, 1992. It wasn't long before the easygoing woman Andrew met showed her true colors. Elisa was often angry and took it out on her daughters, yelling and hitting them. Andrew later said,
"I'd say to her, 'Why do you have them in their rooms again?' She'd just start mumbling about how she didn't want to deal with them. The truth is, she treated them like dirt."
Andrew and Elisa got into a fight in early 1994, after which he left the house for a few days. Once he cooled off, he returned home to find the house empty. She took everything, the kids, the furniture, even Andrew's guns and fishing rods.
There was nothing nice about that woman.
In the fall of 1994, Elisa met a man named Daryl Putnam, whose neighbor had fixed them up, saying they would be perfect for each other. Daryl was 30 and had been deaf almost his entire life. He could understand speech while wearing his hearing aids, but with his disability, he found it hard to find dates. Elisa and Daryl went on a date to a bar, where she told him about her daughters, although she lied to him, telling him then 8-year-old Amber had cancer. Reportedly, Elisa told other people the same story, even putting her daughter in a wheelchair to further this narrative. There is no evidence that Amber ever suffered from cancer. Daryl's mother, Margie Putnam, later said,
"She would have one of her little girls come up the road in a wheelchair and tell people she had cancer, but there was nothing wrong with the little girl."
Daryl was immediately smitten, and they moved in together within weeks. Around this time, Elisa's mother died of cancer. By then, Elisa had bleached her hair blonde, and her weight had careened to over 300 pounds. Elisa and Daryl married on February 4th, 1995. The marriage disintegrated almost immediately. Elisa, who didn't work, had a habit of taking the money Daryl made from his job at a dye factory and disappearing for days on end. According to Daryl,
"I wouldn't see her for days. She would go out and get drunk and carry on. She was never home."
When she was there, he said, she would smack around her daughters. Even so, he soldiered on, at least until he came home from work one day and found Elisa in bed with another man. At that point, Daryl walked out and kept on walking the 7.5 miles to his mother's house. Just like Elisa's previous husband, he came back a few days later to find everything gone, even his expensive hearing aids. According to Margie,
"I know she wasn't taking care of the kids. Daryl said she wasn't feeding the kids. All he wanted was a family. He loved those girls. He stayed with her because of them. But in the end, she broke his heart. She was pure evil."
Elisa and Daryl's marriage was ultimately annulled in 1999. Next, Elisa married Jeffrey Russell Allred on October 3, 1997, in Caldwell County, North Carolina. When their relationship began, they would drive around the upscale neighborhoods of the town of Hickory, and Elisa would talk about her dreams of living in one of the huge houses someday. After their wedding, however, Jeffrey said his wife changed.
"It was like a light switch went off, and she said, 'I got him now.'"
Elisa had a volatile temper and took to beating Jeffrey with a baseball bat and throwing rocks at him. Jeffrey, who was 6 feet 2 inches tall and weighed 260 pounds, was terrified of the woman. The last time he saw Elisa, she had just put her daughters in the car and headed to get groceries at Walmart. When her taillights were out of sight, he pulled his packed suitcase out of the bedroom closet, got in his truck, and drove in the opposite direction.
"I just couldn't take the abuse anymore."
Jeffrey was so afraid of Elisa that he never divorced her so he didn't have to face her in court. He later said of her,
"She was always looking for attention. She always wanted to be known, to be famous. Well, I guess she got what she was looking for after all."
While she was still married to Jeffrey, Elisa met another man named Aaron Young. Aaron was particularly vulnerable because Elisa was the first woman ever to pay attention to him. As a child, he suffered from rickets, a bone disease that's often caused by inadequate nutrition and can cause skeletal deformities. He endured multiple operations on his left leg, and there was a metal rod in his right. Because of this, he was self-conscious and shy. When they married on August 8, 1998, Aaron was 20 and Elisa was 30. Aaron's brother, James, said,
"He was a very responsible kid. When he married her, he grew up overnight. He took being married seriously and was a stable influence in those kids' lives."
During her relationship with Aaron, Elisa became addicted to the internet, which was still relatively new at the time, and spent hours in front of her computer. She soon changed her look, becoming a self-proclaimed goth, dyeing her hair from bleached blonde to black with bright red streaks, and getting multiple tattoos. In 2007, Aaron's mother caught Elisa making out with another man in a car. That spelled the end of that marriage, although, uncharacteristically, Elisa stayed in touch with Aaron after they broke up. They even remained close friends. Elisa had an active online social life. Her MySpace username was GothicFairy6668. Her profile had a black background, covered with red skulls and crossbones, and the Rob Zombie song Living Dead Girl played on a loop in the background. On her profile, she claimed her name was Elisa, spelled E-apostrophe-L-E-S-A, instead of E-L-I-S-A. Her hometown was listed as Never Neverland. She also claimed to have graduated from college, although that has never been confirmed, and it seems unlikely considering she did drop out of high school. Under the general section on her MySpace profile, Elisa wrote,
"People often judge what they don't understand. I myself prefer to be different. There's no one out there I really envy. I strive to be different in my own way, so if people stop and stare, I think to myself, God, I feel sorry for them. They are so scared to step outside the norm that they live in a constant bubble, afraid to stand out and stand up for how they really feel."
On MySpace, Elisa also claimed to have a rare incurable disease that could only be managed by medication to slow the process, which would later turn out to be fibromyalgia, although it's unknown if she actually suffered from it or not. She said the disease prevented her from going outside.
"The sun causes flare-ups, which make things really worse. Those of us with this disease hope one day for a cure to be found, or at least a medication that really works."
Elisa also claimed other medical maladies on her profile.
"I was diagnosed with brain cancer first time in 1990, then in 94, and again in 2006, which each time they give me up for dead and prepared my family for the worst, and I am still here, but now I have something I can't even begin to control. How fair is that?
Considering Elisa's history of lying and malingering, I highly doubt she was ever diagnosed with cancer, and it wouldn't surprise me if she didn't have fibromyalgia either. By the time I'm done telling you this story, trust me, you're not going to believe a word out of this woman's mouth either. The fateful meeting happened around early 2007 when Adam Baker and Elisa Fairchild crossed paths and began communicating on IMVU, which stands for Internet Messaging Virtual Universe. IMVU is an online metaverse and social networking website where members use 3D avatars to meet new people, chat, interact, and create and play games. It's a bit like Second Life. Elisa, who called herself Gothic Fairy, used as her avatar a fairy with red angel wings and a gown. Adams was a black figure with bat wings. Adam, who was 33 at the time, hadn't dated anyone since he and Emily broke up around 2000. 40-year-old Elisa, he thought, was the woman of his dreams. For her part, Elisa told friends that Adam was the one she wanted to spend her life with, writing on MySpace,
"Who says long-distance relationships don't work?"
In early 2008, Elisa, who again had kept in touch with her previous husband, Aaron Young, dropped the bomb on him and his family that she was moving to Australia. Aaron's brother James said,
"We thought she was making that stuff up, just like she always did. I guess we were wrong."
In the United States, Elisa left behind her a trail of eviction notices, judgments from small claims court, and liens from landlords and bill collectors, as well as multiple investigations by DSS regarding abuse by Elisa of her biological children dating back to 1999. The first time Adam ever saw Elisa in person was at the Brisbane airport. I wonder if she told him ahead of time that she weighed around 300 pounds, or if he was surprised, which wouldn't be unheard of. Regardless, he welcomed her with open arms, and she moved in with his family in Giru. Right away, Adam's friends and family didn't trust Elisa. Kim Wright, a family friend, later said,
"Her stories seemed very outrageous. We kept wondering, what is she doing here? She had a lot of stories that never quite rang true."
As for why Adam fell so quickly for Elisa, Kim said,
"Adam was on his own for 8 years with Zara before he met her, and I think he was lonely, and I think that was his biggest downfall, really."
Adam and Elisa were married on June 8, 2008, in the backyard of Adam's parents' home in Giru. Zara was beyond excited to have a mother figure in her life and glowed with pride in her bright red formal gown. Within a few months, Adam stunned his family with the news that he, Zara, and his new bride were moving to the U.S. The family was worried because Zara's medical treatments were free in Australia, which they knew would not be the case in America. He reassured them that Elisa had money and would pay for Zara's continued treatment. Fortunately, shortly before their big move, Zara's cancer went into remission. Zara, who had so looked forward to having a stepmother, was much less thrilled about moving 15,000 miles away from her family and friends. Kim Wright buoyed Zara's spirits by telling her that once she was in America, she could go to Disneyland. Nikki Hay, whose daughter also had cancer and had befriended Zara, spoke with Adam's mother, Karen Baker, over the phone. In a later email to the police chief in Hickory, North Carolina, Nikki said,
"She was so upset. She explained to me that her son had remarried, and they had taken off overseas quite abruptly, and she didn't have any idea of exactly where they were."
Karen, it turned out, was right to be worried about her son and granddaughter. None of them had any idea the scope of the predicament Adam had gotten them into. When the Baker trio first moved to the United States in 2008, Adam was traveling on a tourist visa that expired within 6 months, so of course he was unable to work legally. Elisa, it turned out, did not have money, as Adam had told his family. In fact, she didn't work, and her only income was her disability payments. The Bakers would live in 4 different homes within the space of 2 years. When they first arrived in the U.S., they moved in with Elisa's father, Marshall Fairchild, who sent them packing in mid-2009. He later suggested this was due to Elisa's drug use. Other sources say it was an issue with money. Regardless, this caused Elisa to become estranged from about half of her family. From there, they moved to the town of Granite Falls, where they rented an apartment on Congress Street from a couple named Shirley and Daryl Mims. Shirley and Daryl only saw Zara once, on the day the Bakers moved in, so they assumed she was a visiting grandchild. Shirley later said,
"We never saw her after that, so we never thought no more about it. We never heard, we never saw her, or anything. She didn't come out to go to school. I never seen him go to work. They came and went, but it wasn't like they were going to work or nothing.
The Bakers only lasted for about 6 months in the Granite Falls apartment. According to Shirley,
they were violent. It was physical. You could hear them fighting and everything. They were fighting one night, and then they came out into the parking lot fighting. He came storming out the door. I was sitting outside smoking, and she came out after him. So we asked them to move. They went. They didn't give us no hard time about it.
At the time of their eviction, the Bakers were 2 months behind on rent. Based on their experience with the Bakers, Shirley and Daryl believed Adam and Elisa kept Zara in the attic. Shirley said,
they would come and go, all day, all night, everything. But the little girl was never with them. We kept hearing all these noises in the attic. I truly believe that's where she was at. In my heart, that's where she was at, because when they moved, we didn't hear the noises no more. And then my husband went up to the attic later on, and some boards had been moved, and there was a sheet up there.
According to Daryl, he and his wife were investigating a smell in the home after the Bakers moved out. When they went upstairs, they found a closet door missing and footprints on the closet walls. In the attic, they found sheetrock torn down.
Like someone was laying on it,
Daryl said.
We used to hear noises in the middle of the night. I don't know if it was the little girl staying up here or what, but we've heard no more noises since they've been gone.
Next, Adam, Elisa, and Zara moved into the County Manor Estates mobile home park in Hudson, where they rented a trailer for $350 a month. Bobby Green and his partner, Kayla Rotenberry, lived next door. Guess who lived a few doors down? Aaron Young, Elisa's previous husband. Well, previous is a strong word. As it would later turn out, Elisa was still legally married to Aaron when she wed Adam, throwing the legality of their marriage into question. Unbelievably, Elisa introduced Aaron to Adam as her brother instead of her ex-husband, and told neighbors the same story. Bobby Green said,
she told us Aaron was her brother. They were up there quite a bit, like they were a regular family.
He knew Adam believed Aaron was Elisa's brother, too.
Adam was gullible and went along with everything she said. He was just somebody else to manipulate, that's how I see it.
One night, Bobby and Kayla babysat Zara while Adam and Elisa went out. Zara wouldn't leave Bobby's side, even while he cooked dinner for her and their children.
She stayed right by my side, like on my hip the whole time.
When he saw Adam's car return later that night, he called to Zara.
I said, well, here's your mommy and daddy. They will be over to get you in a minute. Zara ran and hid in the bedroom. She wouldn't go home, and that was maybe a month before they moved out. That's when you know something was going on.
Bobby and Kayla said they saw and heard Elisa abusing Zara. Kayla remembered seeing Elisa injure her hand on Zara's prosthetic leg during one beating. She hit the little girl so hard she broke her hand on her prosthetic leg. Elisa later told Adam she broke her hand in a fall. Still, the couples remained friendly, at least until Bobby and Kayla could no longer tolerate Elisa's lies and temper. Bobby told a reporter that Elisa told far-fetched stories, such as she knew Chris Daughtry and had written music for his band, she had been a bounty hunter and knew Dog from the A&E TV show Dog the Bounty Hunter, she had been a police officer and was shot in the line of duty, and she claimed to have a beach house. Bobby later scoffed,
she had a beach house and can't keep up the rent on a 3-bedroom trailer?
Another neighbor, Tanya Hefner, also saw Elisa's treatment of Zara, who she noticed walked with a limp, although she didn't immediately know Zara had a prosthetic leg. Tanya said Elisa often made Zara walk up and down the steep hill leading from the Baker's trailer into a cul-de-sac, all the while hitting the little girl and swearing at her. Tanya said,
the whole neighborhood had seen her hit Zara. We heard Elisa cuss her up and down the hill and make fun of her about her leg. Oh, you think you're so good. I think you should get that limp out of your leg. You need to get up that hill, smack. Walk faster. It was awful.
Tanya later made a sworn statement to police that after she confronted Elisa about the way she treated Zara, Elisa threatened her. Tanya also told police about Zara's abuse and contacted Zara's school, Hudson Elementary. The school told her they had concerns about Zara being abused and about her poor attendance. Zara frequently had bruises, which Elisa explained away as Zara falling over because of her prosthetic leg. When questioned, Zara likely backed up whatever stories Elisa gave the social workers, such as the one in which she told them Zara had fallen in the bathroom, resulting in a black eye. Zara was probably too scared of her stepmother to go against her, and because of her father's work hours, Zara was often alone with Elisa. After Zara came to school while attending Hudson Elementary, with a black eye in fourth grade, two teachers visited her home. One teacher gave Zara her cell phone number because she was so worried about the little girl. Staff at the school were so concerned about Zara's well-being that they kept a box of records documenting apparent abuse. From January 29th through July 12th of 2010, Caldwell County Social Services received four reports about Zara being mistreated. Each report was related to excessive discipline and an injurious environment. The last report was transferred to Catawba County when the Bakers made their final move to the town of Hickory. All four reports were investigated and closed with no action taken. DSS said it found no evidence of maltreatment or child safety issues. The agency's involvement with the Bakers ended on August 6, 2010. 7 weeks later, Zara would be dead. All the while, Elisa kept up her public persona as a caring stepmother. In May of 2010, she took Zara to a charity event at Charlotte Motor Speedway, where the little girl was fitted for hearing aids. Zara and Elisa had this to say at the event.
Sound better than without them. So I can actually hear more than without my hearing aids.
It's going to make me be able to hear better and be able to hear, like, talk to my friends and my family.
A lot of people don't understand that treatment does tend to take other things away from her. She wants to go to college. She can hear now. It's been a blessing.
In July, the Bakers moved from the Hudson Mobile Home to a tiny house in the Viewmont section of Hickory in Catawba County. By then, Elisa had lost quite a bit of weight and looked very different than she did in her wedding photos from 2 years before. Zara was re-enrolled in Hudson Elementary School, where she had recently finished fourth grade, but she did not attend school in the fall. Instead, in August, Elisa notified school officials that her stepdaughter would be homeschooled. There is no evidence that Zara ever received any education at home. According to neighbors in Hickory, they did not even know Zara existed. One said,
"We didn't even know they had a child."
69-year-old Eddie Mitchell lived across the street from the family and tried to strike up conversations with Adam.
"I tried to talk to him two or three times, but every time I did, he put his head down, totally ignored me. I had no idea he was Australian. Did not want to talk. That's unusual around here."
On September 22, 2010, Elisa and her ex-husband Aaron both visited IMVU and reportedly took part in Chainsaw Massacre role-playing, in which their digital family created a virtual chainsaw massacre. Elisa's last MySpace sign-in took place on Friday, October 8, 2010. Her mood on that day was listed as crazy. This 911 call was placed in the early morning hours of Saturday, October 9, 2010, by Elisa Baker herself.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
My husband works for a tree maintenance company, and our backyard's on fire.
Your what's on fire?
The backyard. We've got big mulch piles and wood piles because okay. We sell firewood.
Okay, what's your address, ma'am?
It's 2121 Avenue Northwest.
2121st Avenue Northwest?
Yes.
Okay, is it close
right
to your
behind
house? Is it close to your house?
No, it's kind of off. We're right behind where the new 127 Bistro opened.
Uh-huh. What's your phone number there, ma'am?
855.
Uh-huh.
Let me give you my cell phone because I can't even remember my
whole 855. Okay,
yeah.
We'll get them out there, ma'am.
5:20 a.m., firefighters in Hickory responded to a small grass fire at the Baker home at 2121st Ave Northwest. A Hickory police officer looking around the property noticed the passenger side door of a silver 1996 Chevy Tahoe SUV hanging open and the smell of gasoline coming from inside the vehicle. On closer inspection, he found a handwritten note on the front windshield addressing Mark Coffey, who was the owner of the home and Adam's boss at a tree service and landscaping company. The note read,
"Mr. Coffey, you like being in control. Now we have your daughter, and your pot-smoking redhead son is next unless you do what is asked. $1 million unmarked. We'll be in touch soon."
The words,
"No cops,"
were scribbled on the top and bottom of the page. Police noted that Mark Coffey and his daughter were both present and fine at the home. At 6:41 a.m., police and fire officials left after deeming the fire, which was easily contained, an arson. No one thought, in light of the ransom note claiming a kidnapping had occurred, to check on Zara until 2 p.m., when Adam Baker made this 911 call.
Secret Police 911, what is your emergency?
Yeah, my daughter is missing.
I'm sorry? Your daughter is missing?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, what's your address?
21 21st Avenue, Northwest. The police were out here last night. They were firing a ransom note for my boss's daughter. I got up this a little while ago, and it appears they took my daughter instead of my boss's daughter.
Okay. How old's your daughter?
She's 10. She's handicapped. She has a prosthetic leg, so that...
How long has she been missing?
We checked in there last night about 2:30, and she was there, and all this happened last night about 5 o'clock, so I don't know if they set a fire in the yard to distract us to go out, and when they snuck in the door, or I don't know.
Okay, I'm not familiar with what happened last night. What happened last night?
Last night, we were woken up. My dog woke me up, and I had a fire in the backyard, and somebody had poured gas in my company vehicle that I drive for work. They left a ransom note on the company vehicle to my boss saying they had his daughter and his son was next. And his daughter's fine. His daughter came with him here last night when I called him. And it appears they may have taken my daughter instead of his daughter.
They took his daughter. Okay, do you know who this was?
I don't know who may have taken her? No, ma'am.
Do you have any idea why they were threatening to take his daughter?
I don't know.
Okay, what's your name?
My name is Adam Baker.
And your phone number? Okay, so no one has seen your daughter since 2:30 this morning?
No, like I said, we had all that drama last night, and me and my wife went back to bed. And my daughter's, I think, coming into puberty, so she's hitting that broody stage. So we only see her when she comes out, when she wants something, and that's about it.
Okay, and did you say that she was handicapped?
Yes, ma'am. She has a above-the-knee amputation.
Okay, she has one leg that's partially amputated?
Yeah, she has a prosthetic leg, which apparently they're taking with her.
Leg was taken with her?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and you don't have any idea at all?
No, like I said, it was all addressed to him, and apparently it was all taken out on him, and I guess they thought he lived in this town.
On this. Okay,
do
I'll stop my partner.
Okay.
Okay. Did you talk to your boss about it?
I've just spoken to him, and he told me that he's going to be here shortly.
Okay. So do you think that he knows?
We had an officer out here last night, and he ran through who he thought it may have been, like an ex-employee or something.
Okay. And you said 21 25th Avenue Northwest?
21 21st Avenue, sorry.
21st Avenue.
Yes, ma'am.
21 21st Avenue. Okay, hold on just a second.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I see it now. I wasn't finding the call. Okay.
It was a Officer Rowland.
Okay. All right. Okay, all right. We're getting the police on the way out there. If you find out anything at all in the meantime before we get the officer out there, call me back. Anything that would help us as far as finding your daughter.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Bye-bye.
Quickly, an Amber Alert was issued, and missing posters were created, describing Zara as 5 feet 1 inch tall, weighing about 85 pounds, with brown hair and blue eyes. Adam Baker told police he wasn't sure when he last saw his daughter because he worked long hours, leaving early in the morning and arriving home late at night. He thought the last time he had seen her was October 6th or 7th when he came home from work in the evening, saying she was already asleep when he saw her. Elisa Baker, however, told police that the family had gone to Oktoberfest the night before, When they got home, she and Zara went to bed. She awoke at about 2:30 a.m. and checked on Zara, who was still sleeping in her own bedroom, before Elisa went back to bed. When she awoke at 5:20 a.m., she saw the fire in the backyard and called 911. She told police she believed someone had set the fire to lure her and Adam out of the house so they could sneak in and take Zara. Already concerned about inconsistencies in Elisa's story, investigators asked her to take a polygraph, to which she readily agreed. She was asked if she had hurt Zara, if she knew of anyone who had harmed Zara, and if she knew who wrote the ransom note. On all three questions, the polygraph results indicated deception. The morning after Zara's disappearance was reported, Elisa Baker was arrested on charges of larceny by employee, unsafe tires, driving with a revoked license, 4 counts of communicating threats, and 6 counts of writing bad checks. At around 1 p.m. the same day, a search and rescue dog gave a positive alert for the presence of human remains in both the Chevy Tahoe and a burgundy 1999 Toyota Camry sedan also on the Baker's property. Both vehicles were impounded by Hickory police, who took swabs of what they thought might be blood from the Camry. That afternoon, police went door-to-door in the neighborhood, talking to dozens of residents, handing out Zara's picture, and asking people's permission to search their outbuildings, sheds, and woods near their houses. They gathered surveillance video from businesses in the area, trying to trace the events leading to Zara's disappearance. On October 11th, Adam, along with Hickory Police Chief Tom Adkins, appeared on Good Morning America to plead for anyone with information about Zara's disappearance to come forward. That afternoon, during a press conference, police revealed that search warrants were issued for both of the Bakers' vehicles and that they hadn't found anyone outside the home who had seen Zara within the past few weeks.
We are questioning the validity of that note. We have no further demands from that note.
The last sighting of Zara by anyone outside the home was by Pat Adams, the floor manager of the In Your Home Furnishings store in Hickory. Pat claimed to have seen Zara in the store with Elisa on September 25th, although it seems likely she was off by a few days, considering the timeline of the case that was later established. Pat remembered overhearing the woman call the little girl with the prosthetic leg by name. She later said,
"I thought that was a strange name, which it is. It's different. Pretty, but different.
I recognized her picture on the computer. They came in on that Saturday morning, September the 25th. Elisa said she was just wanted to look around, so we let her look around. I was going down the aisle, and I saw Zara standing in the middle of the aisle. And as I walked past her, I laid my hand on her shoulder and said, 'Excuse me, sweetheart.' And she looked at me and smiled, and I went on down the aisle. I went back to customer service, and the ladies up there were talking about the little girl with the prosthetic leg. And I remember thinking that how sad it was, a child that young having the hearing aid and the prosthetic leg."
On the afternoon of October 11th, investigators conducted a search of Real Tree Services in Burke County, where Adam worked. Canine units detected suspicious odors in log and mulch piles and a wood chipper at the work site. The next day, October 12th, Hickory Police Chief Tom Adkins, who truly is one of the heroes of this story, struggled to suppress tears as he made the following announcement.
"The Amber Alert on Zara Baker would cancel today, and the decision to focus this investigation from a missing child or abducted child will turn into a homicide investigation."
It would soon turn out that Elisa Baker had admitted to writing the ransom note and had been charged with felony obstruction of justice as a result. The same day, Brittany Bentley and her mother, Kim Drum, spoke with CBS's Maggie Rodriguez about Zara's disappearance and home life. Brittany was married to Elisa's nephew, Zachary, but was estranged at the time of the interview.
Brittany, let me begin with you. What do you think happened to Zara?
My honest opinion, I think Lisa has something to do with it. I just think this is something for a long time that we knew was going to happen. Everybody that was close to the family.
What makes you think that she would harm Zara?
Just from the times I went over there, the environment Zara lived in, she was locked in her room, allowed 5 minutes out of day to eat. That was it. She was beat almost every time I was over there for just the smallest things. If Lisa would get mad, she would take it out on Zara. Things the kid didn't deserve. She just had a horrible home life. She had a One time I remember she had a black eye, and she said it was from the door, but we all knew it. You know, we suspected it was from Lisa.
Did her father, for example, try to stop this, or did anyone report this to authorities?
That's the crazy thing. I never saw Adam, like, spank her, punish her, do anything, but he would sit there and watch Lisa do it to his child. He would just sit there and not say anything. Her daughter actually reported to DSS, and they came. I don't know how much was done, but yes, it was reported.
So, Kim, let me ask you, do you believe it's possible that this was just a random kidnapping?
No, I knew it from the moment my father had called and told me this is Lisa.
Authorities say that they found Zara's hearing aids in the home, but they didn't say anything about her prosthetic leg. What does that tell you, Kim? Do you find that unusual?
That's what completely made it unusual to me. Zara, when she spent the night with us, and she stayed with us a lot, an hour before she would go to bed, she would put her pajamas on, always take her leg off. It was a routine for her. She never, ever went to bed with her leg on.
How did she handle her disabilities, Brittany? Was she kind of a miserable child, or was she a happy child despite of this?
Oh, no, she was a happy child. I remember she could walk on one leg faster than, you know, we could walk on two legs. She was an amazing child. She was never angry, depressed, always happy, always loving, which I didn't understand. The only time I ever saw any anger in her is when she'd come stay with us on the weekends. When it was time for her to leave, she would just get mad. I hate you, I hate you. And I explained to my mother, I understand why, because she didn't want to go home, because her home life was miserable.
Over the next several days, searches took place in multiple locations. Ponds were drained, dogs sniffed through piles of mulch and tree trimming equipment, and various properties were searched, to no avail. On October 13th, Elisa's younger sister, Carrie Fairchild, granted a telephone interview to Nancy Grace.
A little over a year ago, you had a big falling out with a stepmom. Why?
She just done her father real wrong. They come back from Australia and moved in with him, and they just said they'd pay the bills and didn't, and it just, everything got cut off on him and everything, and half of the family just had a falling out with her over it, and we didn't
Carrie,
know
why
where she
do
was.
They move so much? Why do they move from place to place?
She's always done that. I do not know.
Carrie, a lot of suspicion on your sister right now. Tell me, has she been known to lie in the past?
Yes, all growing up, she always made out like her children was sick and possibly dying, and same with herself. She always had 10 to 20 illnesses that she always would say that was wrong with her, and you couldn't believe anything she ever said.
I don't understand that. Why would she make up all these illnesses of her own?
I do not know. We never knew. From what I understand, I think someone tried to get her help a long time ago, but because she was over 18 and stuff, it just led nowhere.
Well, Carrie, is it true that she has even put her children in a wheelchair to pretend they're sick?
Yes.
Late that afternoon, Elisa's son, Douglas Proctor, gave a statement to the media, thanking the public for its support searching for Zara and asking that everyone respect his family's privacy at this difficult and stressful time. Douglas himself had only met Zara a handful of times. That evening, about 150 people gathered at East Hickory Baptist Church for a candlelight vigil, praying for her to come home safely. On October 15th, Adam was seen with investigators at the Baker's former apartment in Caldwell County. This was the apartment where Shirley and Daryl Mims suspected Zara had been kept in the attic. Police took evidence including a plastic bag, a mattress, and a bed frame. Several days later, on October 20th, Elisa's attorney sought a bond reduction on the obstruction charge in court from a Catawba County judge. Little did Elisa know that her daughter, Amber Fairchild, would throw a major wrench into the machinery. On the stand, Amber told the court that her mother had told her she was thinking about leaving North Carolina the day before she was arrested. Amber said that when she was arrested, Elisa was involved in an online relationship with a man from London, England, who had sent her up to £1,000 over the previous 12 months. She also said she was afraid of her mother, who she described as a potentially violent and unstable woman. The prosecutor pointed out that Elisa had failed to show up for court dates for previous charges, such as traffic violations and communicating threats, which I'll talk about in more detail in Part 2. Instead of lowering Elisa's bond, the judge, calling the allegations against Elisa
disturbing and unsettling,
raised her bond from $40,000 to $65,000. At that point, for all of Elisa's various charges, her bond was a total of $97,200. Also on October 20th, another search for evidence was underway, this one at the Foothills Environmental Landfill in Lenore. Several mattresses were removed, but 2 days later, police announced they had not found what they were looking for, which was Zara's mattress. This was when Elisa apparently decided to start talking. What she had to say broke the case wide open. According to Elisa, on September 24th, 2010, Zara was sick with a stomach bug and laid down in her room for a nap. Elisa stepped out for about 15 minutes to get cash, and when she returned and checked on Zara, her 10-year-old stepdaughter wasn't breathing. In a panic, Elisa called not 911, but her husband Adam, who she said told her he would take care of the problem. The next morning, Elisa said, Adam revealed to her that he had dismembered his own daughter's body, wrapped the parts in white garbage bags, and rolled the bags into a car cover and a comforter, and he told her he needed her help disposing of Zara's body parts. On October 23rd and 24th, Elisa accompanied investigators, along with cadaver dogs, to several sites where she said some of Zara's body parts were dumped, including locations off Dudley Shoals Road and Christie Road. Near Christie Road, the gel liner from Zara's prosthetic leg was found, as well as a human arm bone. Elisa had reportedly told police she threw Zara's mattress in a dumpster. She led them to another dumpster behind a grocery store in Hudson, where she said she and Adam dumped the car cover and comforter that were used to hide and transport Zara's dismembered body. She had also told police they would find bits of bone and bodily fluids from Zara in the drain trap of the bathtub, and that the plastic gloves she used would be found in the bathroom. Why she would need plastic gloves when she said Adam was the one who did the dismembering, I don't understand. The same day, the North Carolina Defense Counsel assigned Lisa Dubs, who specialized in capital cases, as one of Elisa's attorneys. On October 25th, a mattress was found at the Foothills Environmental Landfill by a landfill employee who was regrading the area that had previously been searched. DNA evidence from the mattress was sent to the SBI and the medical examiner's office in Raleigh. The same day, Adam Baker went to the Hickory Police Department voluntarily to submit to an interview after picking up his mother, Karen, at the Charlotte Douglas International Airport. Adam was arrested and charged with 5 counts of writing worthless checks and 3 counts of failure to appear. His bond was set at $7,000 secured. On October 26th, police found a prosthetic leg in the brush off Christie Road just before dark. Less than a week later, the leg was identified as belonging to Zara Baker after its serial number was compared to Zara's medical records in Australia. Over October 27th and 28th, members of the Hickory Police Department, the FBI, and the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation, along with canine units, returned for a more detailed search inside and outside the Baker home at 21 21st Avenue Northwest. They searched through wood and mulch piles with rakes and a backhoe. A huge amount of evidence was removed from the home, including pieces of drywall, chunks of flooring, drain traps, and even entire sinks. Adam Baker bonded out of jail on October 27th. On November 2nd, 2010, Adam was evicted from the house at 21 21st Avenue by his landlord, Mark Coffey, and was seen removing some of his belongings. In early November, the news broke that Eric Gein, owner of one of the biggest murderabilia sites on the internet, had used an assumed name to write to Elisa Baker in jail. He then published her 3 return letters on his website, Serial Killers, Inc. Hickory Deputy Chief of Police Clyde Deal acknowledged that the letters were likely written by Elisa. After seeing the handwritten documents, he said,
I think probably these letters were down at the jail. I am not a handwriting analyst, but I mean, I wouldn't suspect that it didn't. Obviously not everything she speaks in there is true.
He said the contents of the letter
sound much like the same stuff that she's spouting to some other people.
The letters contained plenty of self-serving information from Elisa, trying to lay the blame for Zara's dismemberment squarely at her husband's feet.
I'm going crazy in this cell. I have told the cops everything I know about what's happened to Zara. They arrested Adam, but he got right back out. How fair is that? See, I told you I have no support. I have never been so angry over stuff as I am right now. He knows what happened to Zara, and yet I'm the one in here, at least for now. We really didn't kill her, but what he did after the fact is kind of horrifying.
She said she was now afraid of Adam. Elisa said she was in solitary confinement and on suicide watch.
I feel like I have nothing to live for now. If I hadn't admitted to that stupid ransom note, I would be out in 3 weeks, but no, they kept pushing and he did that too.
Elisa said she felt like a
freak in a carnival
whenever she was in front of media cameras, and she was worried about being attacked in prison.
Not like I'm not able to defend my freaking self. I heard I have even made it to the Nancy Grace show. They keep calling my lawyer, wanting an interview with me. Everyone does. Sometimes I think my lawyer shouldn't keep me out of the media. I want a chance to tell the truth and defend myself. No one else is. But I keep getting told to say nothing is best. I ain't the monster people are saying. I want a chance to be heard, damn it. This is my life and everyone is playing with it and I have no control over what is said or done. Maybe I should just change my name to Evil. What do you think, LOL?
Elisa said everyone was
telling so many lies
about her.
All I have gotten is hate mail since I've been here from everyone, even my kids. When I get out, I've been told I have nowhere to go, so I am a bit scared. I have truly lost my life.
She said if she got out of jail, she would have to
go into hiding and move across the country. You wouldn't believe all the hate mail. People actually want to kill me. My lawyers don't tell me all the world is saying, but if it is anything like these letters, oh my God.
One particularly selfish and insensitive comment she made was,
I just wonder if Zara hadn't survived cancer and been from Australia, if it would truly be like this. Nothing has went the way it was supposed to, not yet so far. I am beyond stressed. When I saw my attorneys today and they said Adam was out after promising me for my safety he wouldn't be let out, I flipped and have cried since.
About what happened to Zara, she wrote that the police
know where she is and what he has done. That's right, what he has done.
In the third and last letter, Elisa said,
My family will never believe Adam has done what he has. I am helping the cops try and get my soon-to-be ex-husband in here. The cops promised if I would help them with what I know, they would keep him locked up for my safety. I was trying to save us both, but why should I? He is letting everyone destroy me.
She signed the letter,
Dark Wishes, Elisa,
spelling her name E-L-E-S-A instead of the correct spelling of E-L-I-S-A, and even saying in one of the letters that she had changed it. The letters did contain plenty of information, but the one thing they didn't contain was an ounce of remorse or concern for Zara, who actually had lost her life. Of course, it was up to Elisa's defense team to spin things. Attorney Lisa Dubs said in a statement,
Unfortunately, this man, who apparently goes by the false persona of Damien, used fraud and deceit with the sole intention of profiting from the disappearance of Zara Baker. Ms. Baker unfortunately believed this man's representations that he only wanted to offer friendship and support during her incarceration. Much of the information in these letters is in response to specific questions posed by this man. The release of these letters is regrettable and only serves to sensationalize an already complicated situation.
Adam's attorney, Mark Killian, told ABC News that the release of the letters was another source of pain for his client.
These accusations are, I don't know what to say. Mr. Baker obviously categorically denies any of this. We just see these writings as desperate attempts of someone incarcerated to divert attention away.
Regarding the news that Zara was believed dead, Killian said Adam was in
shock. Just the worst nightmare.
Meanwhile, the investigation continued, and sweet little Zara's skeletonized body parts continued to be collected from the various locations where they had been dumped like trash. There is so much more to this case, so to keep the episodes to a manageable length, I'm going to be covering the rest of Zara's story in part 2, which will be released on November 24th. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss it. Subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast really helps me out. That's it for this week, guys. Join me next week for the conclusion of Zara's story. If you like the show, please leave me a 5-star rating and a positive review on your favorite podcast platform. And please subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app. Email tips, comments, questions, or case suggestions to sufferthelittlechildren.pod@gmail.com. You can also subscribe on YouTube by searching Suffer the Little Children Podcast. Visit the website at www.sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com, where you can listen to episodes and become a patron for rewards ranging from a shout-out by name on the show to exclusive gifts. Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest at Suffer the Little Children Pod, and on Twitter at STLCpod. View photos related to today's case on Facebook and Instagram. Read more about today's case and many others at sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com. This podcast was written, hosted, edited, and produced by Lane. Intro theme music is by Dream Note Music. Other music and sound effects for the show were created using sounds from audiojungle.net. Hug your babies a bit closer tonight. Until next week, bye guys.